Now we come to the next section, Rupa Vibhaga, classification of matter. So in this section, the 28 material properties will be classified into different categories. So first, it is stated that Rupa or matter is just one. So according to the definition, that something that changes with the adverse conditions is Rupa, then there is just one Rupa. And that one Rupa is also Ahetuka, rootless. So Rupa is always called rootless because the association with roots is restricted to mental phenomena. Only Chitta can be called rootless or with roots. Rupa is never with roots or three roots. So Rupa is always Ahetuka. Now when we say some karma gives Ahetuka results, we may also mean Rupas. At the moment of Patisandhi, the resultant consciousness arises and Chittasikas also arise with it, and also the Rupa born of karma arise. So Rupa born of karma can be called Ahetuka results because they have no roots. And also Rupa is called Sapachaya, with conditions. With conditions means arising dependent on the four causes. And there are four causes of Rupa that will be taught in next section. So every Rupa is called with condition. With condition means conditioned by some causes. So there are four causes of Rupa, and all 28 material properties are said to be conditioned by these four causes. And so the Rupa is called that which is with conditions. And then it is called subject to asavas. Now asavas is translated as taints or sometimes corruptions and so on. You will study asavas in the seventh chapter. So asavas are some of the mental defilements. So subject to asavas means actually object of asavas. So Rupa is the object of asavas. We can be attached to Rupas. We can have wrong views about Rupa. We can have ignorance of Rupa. So Rupa is always sasava, subject to asavas. And it is also called sankhata, conditioned. Conditioned by, again, four causes. Chittas and chittasikas are also sankhata because they arise dependent on some conditions. And Rupa is called mundane lokiya. It belongs to the mundane world and not to supramundane state. So Rupa is always mundane because there is no matter that transcends the world of the five clinging aggregates. In the word lokiya, there is the word loka. So loka means the world. And the world means the world of five aggregates of clinging. So matter does not transcend, matter does not go beyond these five aggregates, because matter is one of the five aggregates. So it is called lokiya or mundane. And kama vajra. So matter is always of sense sphere. It belongs to kama vajra. Now, matter exists in fine material plane, but it pertains by its nature to the sense sphere. although there are rupa in the rupa vajra plane, we do not say that rupa as a whole belong to rupa vajra realm. So although it arises in the rupa vajra plane, it is called kama vajra because it is the object of sensual craving, and it is also called anaramanan, no objects. That means matter is without objects. Without objects means it does not take object. Matter is object itself, and so it does not take object. It cannot cognize an object, it cannot know an object. Now mind can be both subject and object. Mind can take another mind as object. So sometimes mind is subject, sometimes mind is object. Now it becomes clear when you practice meditation. Now you are making notes of the mental states arising in your mind. And so in that case, one mind is a subject and the other mind is the object. So mind can be both subject and object. But matter can be just object. It can never take an object itself. And also it is called in Pali appahatabbam, not to be abandoned. Not to be abandoned means it cannot be eradicated. Now when the enlightenment occurs, the path consciousness arises and it eradicates mental defilements. Now, eradicate means these mental defilements are destroyed and they will not arise in the mind of that person in the future. Although some of the mental states can be abandoned or eradicated, rupa is not like that. So rupa cannot be abandoned. Rupa cannot be eradicated. It cannot be eradicated like the defilements by the four supramundane paths. Now there is a saying in the discourses that monks, rupa is not your own. Give it up or abandon it. But there, what Buddha meant was not to abandon rupa, but to abandon attachment to that rupa. So there, when Buddha said, abandon rupa, Buddha meant abandon attachment to rupa. So rupa can never be abandoned or eradicated. So this is the characteristics of rupa. It is always without roots. It is always with conditions. It is always subject to asavas. It is always conditioned again, and it belongs to mundane sphere or mundane world, and it is always kama vajra. It does not take object, and it cannot be eradicated as the mental defilements are eradicated by four path consciousnesses. So just this one rupa comes to be classified manifold by classifying it into the internal and external and so on. So if you can look at the chart also, it would be clearer. So the chart is on page 262 and also in the handouts. So there are 16 classifications there, and the first is internal. Actually there are 8. Internal and external are one pair. So what are the internals, internal rupas according to that chart? Eye, ear, nose, tongue and body. So these five are called internal matter. Now internal matter does not mean that they are in the they are only inside the bodies because the kaya is itself a body. Now, the other types of material property also exist inside the body, but they are not called internal here. So, the word internal or the Pali word ajjatika is a term and used in technical sense. So, when we say internal rupas or ajjatika rupas, we mean only these five, not everything that exists in our body. So, now, how many rupas does a man have? 27. Right? And a woman also? 27. So, since they arise in our bodies, can we call all these 27 internal or ajjatika according to this classification? No. Only the five are called ajjatika, and they are eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body. They are the most useful material properties in the body. So without the eye, you cannot see and so on. So they were as though saying to us, if we do not arise in you, you will be like a piece of log, something like that. So they are the most useful material properties in our bodies, and so they are called here ajjatika or internal. Since they are internal, the others are called external. So, how many internal rupas are there? Five. Then external rupas, 28 minus 5, 23. So this is one pair, internal and external. So although the other material properties arise in our body, they are called external, according to this classification. And the next classification is bases and non-base. So this is just another pair. So base rupa and non-base rupa. Now what are the base rupa? Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and heart base. So these six are called base rupa because they serve as a base for consciousness. Since they are base rupa, the other 22 are called non-base rupas. And then we have door rupa and non-door rupa, those that serve as doors. So again, eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body are doors. And then what else? Bodily intimation and vocal intimation, they are also called doors. So when we do something by body or by speech, we make use of the intimations. By bodily intimation and by verbal intimation, we perform the bodily actions or verbal or vocal actions. So they are called dwara or door. So door rupa, how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Then the rest are non-door rupas. They do not serve as doors for the rising of consciousness and also for the rising of bodily actions and verbal actions. Now, the next is faculty rupa and non-faculty rupa. Now, the Pali word for the word faculty is indriya. Now, indriya means controlling power or governing. So they have control power over their respective spheres, and so they are called indriya, faculty rupas. Now the eye, if there are no eyes, we cannot see, so the seeing is controlled by the eyes. That means seeing is governed by the eyes. So the eyes are called faculty. So in this way, there are how many faculty rupas? Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and then femininity, masculinity, and life faculty. So these eight are called faculty rupa or indriya rupa. Then the rest are called non-faculty in Pali and Nindriya Rupa. And next is, let us leave the etc. alone now, gross and subtle. So how many are gross? Earth element, fire element, air element. And then eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, form. Form means visible object. Sound, smell, taste, touch. Touch are the same as the three above. That's all, 12. So these 12 are called gross. Now here, these terms are used here in a technical sense. We should not be confused with their ordinary connotations. Gross means not really rough rupa or big rupa. They are restricted in application to the material phenomena that are instrumental in the genesis of sense consciousness. So they can be instrumental in the sense consciousness as arising and so on. So that is why they are called gross here. Not because they are big or they are rough. So they imply nothing about the relative size or nearness of the object. So gross are altogether 12. When 12 are gross, the others are called subtle. So water is a subtle rupa, and then those beginning with femininity up, down to impermanence are called subtle rupa. That means they are profound and they are difficult to see. Not easy to see as the gross rupas are. Now, water element, according to Abhidhamma, is non-touchable. No, we cannot touch the water element. So, its water element is said to be subtle rupa. But the earth element and others are called gross rupa. And along with the word gross, there is another word, near, proximate. Near means also not near in distance, near to your understanding. It is easy to understand. So they are called proximate or near. And also they are called impinging. That means it strikes on the senses. They strike on the senses, and so they are called impinging. Impinging means with touching or something like that. And so the opposite of those three are subtle, and then far, and then non-impinging. And then next one is clung to and not clung to. Now this what is important. So please turn to page 245. Now, the English word clung to is the translation of Pali word upadina. Now, the 18 kinds of matter born of karma are known as clung to because they have been acquired as the units of karma motivated by craving and wrong view. Matter produced by causes other than karma is known as not clung to. So, matters that are produced by karma are called clung to, and matter that are produced by the other three causes are called not clung to. Generally, however, in a less technical sense, all organic matter in the body is referred to as clung to, while inorganic matter is spoken of as not clung to. You may not be reading Pali, so it may not be useful for you. But if you are going to read Pali, you will find these words, upadina and upadina, used in the senses other than mentioned here. So, the word clung to or upadina in many places mean just the living body, or just those that belong to the living body, not just caused by karma only. And also, not clung to means inorganic matter, that means non-living things. So, It is important that we understand this difference clearly, whether the word Upadina means just the karma-born matter or it means the organic matter. It should be noted that unlike the other pairs of terms used for the purpose of classification, the pair clung to and not clung to does not establish a mutually exclusive dichotomy. For nine kinds of material phenomena born of karma can also originate from other causes. But in the Tika of this manual, it is said that if we take the ones not been taken before, then we have 18 on the one hand and 10 on the other. That means we have 18 for clung to and 10 for non-clung to. So we can also divide in that way. And then see below 17. I think that is not 17, but it is 14. So you may correct that. It is on page 251. So we will be studying that later. So how many are clung to? 18. Four essentials, and then five sensitivities, form, and then smell, taste, so tangibility also, femininity, masculinity, heart base, life faculty, nutriment, and space. So these 18 are called clung to, and the others are non-clung to, but here the number is given as 19. So the number can be 19 or 10 following the tika, following the sub-commentary. So clung to are those that are caused by karma, and non-clung to are those that are caused by citta, utu, and ahara. The next pair is taking objects and not taking objects. So those that take objects and those that do not take objects. According to Abhidhamma, the eye and ear are regarded as sense organs that do not reach or touch their respective objects. That is a special meaning. First, we try to find out which are rupa that take objects. So eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and then only five. So these five are called those taking objects, and the other 23 are called those that do not take objects. Now, just a few moments ago, we learned that rupa does not take objects. Now on page 243 we found that the matter is objectless. But here matter is said to take objects. So actually it means that it is the base for consciousness that take objects. Now I is the base for seeing consciousness, which takes the visible object as object, and so on. So taking objects means not that these material properties take objects, but they serve as a base for consciousness that take objects. And among them, eye and ear are said to be not reaching or not touching the objects. That means they take the object before the object reaches them. Even when you hear a sound, according to this explanation, it takes the sound just before it really strikes at your eardrum. So just before it is striking the eardrum, the ear sensitivity takes that object. Later on, it strikes the eardrum, but it takes the object before the sound waves hit the eardrum. So eye and ear are here regarded as organs that do not reach or touch their respective objects. But the others are called sampatta, or those that directly touch the objects. So only when you the smell, not only when the smell comes into contact with the sensitive parts in the nose do you get the smell, and so on. These are the difference between the first two, eye and ear, and the other three, nose, tongue, and body. So the others do not take objects. That is, the others are not the base for those that take the objects. And then the last pair is inseparable and separable. Those that cannot be separated and those that can be separated. Those that cannot be separated are earth, water, fire, air, form or visible object, smell, taste, tangibility, and nutriment. So these are called inseparable. That means they cannot be physically separated. Even in the smallest particle of matter, there are these eight material properties. So they can be separated in your mind, they can be separated by understanding, but they cannot be separated physically. So wherever even in a particle of dust, there are these eight inseparable material properties. Now on page 246, it is explained that the four great essentials and the four derivatives, color, smell, taste, and nutritive essence, are known as inseparable matter, avinibhogarupa. So this is a Pali name for inseparables, because they are always bound together and are present in all material objects, from the simplest to the most complex. So everywhere we find these eight inseparable material properties. The other types of material phenomena may be present or not, and are thus regarded as separable. So the others are physically separable. A material group, kalapa, that consists solely of these eight elements is known as a pure octet. Now, the groups we will study later on. So that group of these eight elements is called pure octet. That means not mixed with others, just these pure inseparable material properties. In Pali, they are called Suddhataka. Suddha means pure, and Ataka means having eight. So the having eight pure material properties, or a group with nutritive essence as eight. Sometimes it is called Ojatamaka. Oja means nutritive essence, and Atamaka means eighth. So the nutritive essence as the eighth element. So sometimes you will find the word pure octet, sometimes the same group of material properties are called group with nutritive essence as eighth. So these are the classifications of matter. The inseparables are 20. So the others can be separated. So thus the wise analyze in a fitting way the 28 kinds of matter with respect to such divisions as the internal and so forth. This is just a verse to help your memory. Now, in the olden days, these books were written for memorization. Even now in our country, novices and monks had to get it by heart. But don't ask me. I have forgotten many of them. Now, there may be some who could not memorize the whole book. So for those, the authors give some verses at the end of sections. So now the summary here, you see, it is a reminder of this section. So if you memorize this verse, then you can remember this section. So it is to help the memorization that these verses are given at the end of the sections. So in these days, it may seem to be superfluous. It may mean to be repetitious. But please understand that these books are written, made for those who have no writing materials readily available. So for them, the memorization is the only way to own a book. The books are written on palm leaves, and they are not easy to get. So novices, young novices, how can they get a book? It would be very difficult for them to get a book. So instead of getting the real book, they get it and put it into their stomach. So that way the book is always with them. So if you can memorize the whole book, it would be much better. But if you cannot, then these verses will help you to remember what was taught in the book. So there may be some repetitions like this in the whole of this book. So now we go to the next section, Rupa Samuthana, the origination of matter. How matter is produced, how matter comes to be, or the causes of matter. There are four causes of matter taught in Abhidhamma. The first one is Kamma, and the second, Chitta, or consciousness. And the third is Utu, or temperature. The meaning of the word Utu is climate or weather. But here, climate or weather means heat or cold, and so it is temperature. And the fourth one is Ahara. You have met Ahara. So nutriment. These are the four causes of Rupa. So some Rupas are caused by Kamma, some by consciousness, and so on. Those we will study in this section. But first, we must make sure we understand what Kamma is, what Chitta is, and so on, relevant to this section. So, there are 25 kinds of wholesome and unwholesome Kamma pertaining to the sense sphere and the fine material sphere. So they produce in one's internal continuum in our bodies material phenomena originating from Kamma, moment by moment, beginning with rebirth linking. So in this section, Kamma means only 25 kinds of wholesome and unwholesome Kamma pertaining to the sense sphere and fine material sphere. So unwholesome 12, it's easy. And then what? Wholesome sense sphere. So wholesome sense sphere means this. And then wholesome fine material sphere. So this. So 12 plus 8 plus 5, we have 25. So here, Kamma means just these 25 chetas, or the 25 chetanas concomitant with these chetas. And these are not taken here. Arupa vachara, wholesome Kamma is not taken here simply because they do not produce matter. Arupa vajras are those who hate matter, and so they cannot produce matter. So we are studying those Kammas that produce matter, and so we take Kamma as 25. 25 means 12 akusala, 8 kama vajra kusala, and 5 rupa vajra kusala. So these cause, or these produce material properties. And those material properties are called kama-born material properties. As you know, kama is chetana. So chetana accompanying these 25 kinds of kama produce rupa, that is called rupa born of kama. And when kama produces results, it produces moment by moment, beginning with rebirth linking. So from the first moment of rebirth linking, at every moment all through the life, the kama born matter is produced. So how powerful kama is, you can imagine. All through life, the kama-born material properties are produced at every moment, at every sub-moment. So from the moment of the arising, sub-moment of rebirth until, let's say, death. At every moment, at every sub-moment in life, the kama-born rupas are produced. So here it says, moment by moment, beginning with rebirth linking. So please note this, because later on we'll have to make use of this. And there's one word, volitionally conditioned. Now this word is connected here with material phenomena originating from karma. But in the other books explaining this manual, especially in Yama language, this volitional condition is connected with wholesome and unwholesome karma. Wholesome and unwholesome karma that are volitionally conditioned, because when you do karma, you are said to condition the karma. The word sankhata you have met, those that are conditioned are called sankhata. Abhisankhata is pretty much the same. And abhisankhata, or its sister word abhisankhara, is always used relating to karma. So it is better to connect it with wholesome and unwholesome karma rather than with material phenomena. Okay, so 25 kinds of wholesome and unwholesome karma of kama vajra and rupa vajra produces kama born matter from the arising moment of rebirth linking all through life, at every sub-moment of these types of consciousness. So at the moment of arising, kama-born metas are produced, and then at the moment of the presence of rebirth linking, they are produced, and at the moment of disappearing, the kama-born rupas are produced, and so on. So kama-born matter increases at every moment. But after the 17th moment, those that are produced 17 moments previously will disappear. Now that is karma. Then second is citta, consciousness. Here also we do not take all 89 or 121 types of consciousness. Only how many? 75 types of consciousness. Only 75 types of consciousness can produce material properties. And they are excluding the immaterial sphere resultants and the two sets of fivefold sense consciousness. Five full sense consciousness are these up to this. So seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, and so on, these 10, and then excluding the immaterial sphere resultants, these 4. So 10 and 4, 14. 89 minus 14, we get 75. So these 75 types of consciousness can produce matter that are called consciousness born, or produced by consciousness. Now, material phenomena produced by consciousness spring up starting from the arising moment of the first bhavanga. Now, it is important. They are produced at what moment? Produce material phenomena originating from consciousness beginning with the first moment of life continuum. That means beginning with the arising moment of first continuum. Immediately following the rebirth linking is first bhavanga. So with the arising moment of first bhavanga, or at the arising moment of each chaita, the chaita born medha are produced. Now please note that it says beginning with the first moment of life continuum, but they do so only at the moment of arising. That means at every moment of arising, the chaita-born rupas are produced. So chaita-born rupas are not produced during the moment of presence and death or disappearing. Only at the first moment of every chaita, only at the arising moment of every chaita is chaita-born metta produced. Now in the notes, page 248, the rebirth consciousness does not produce consciousness-born matter, since at the moment of rebirth, the matter that arises is born of karma, and because this consciousness is a newcomer to the new existence. So the rebirth consciousness is a newcomer to the new existence, and so it cannot produce matter. And the tenfold sense consciousness lacks the power to produce metta, because it has no strong mental states as the jhana factors. Now they are among the rootless chetas. So since they are rootless, they are not strong, so they cannot produce metta. And the 4 immaterial resultants cannot do so, since they arise only in the immaterial realms. So these 4 arise only in Arupa Vajra realms, and so they cannot produce matter. Now, according to the commentators, mental phenomena are strongest at the moment of arising, and material phenomena strongest at the moment of presence. Now this we must understand. Rupa is strong at the moment of presence or titi, second moment. But consciousness is strong at the moment of arising. When rupa has first arisen, it is just arising, and so it is not strong yet. But during the presence moment of metta, it becomes strong. Because how many sub-moments are there for presence moment of rupa? 51 minus 2, 49. So when it lasts for 49 moments, it becomes strong. So rupa is strong during its presence moment. So that means 49 sub-moments. And chaita is said to be strong only at the present moment. So when it arises, it is strong. But when it reaches the present stage, it becomes a little weak, and then when it reaches the third stage, it goes away. So the mental phenomena are strongest at the moment of arising, and material phenomena are strongest at the moment of presence. Consciousness therefore produces matter only at its arising moment, when it is strongest, not at the moments of presence and dissolution. This is a basis for what is to be taught from now on. So first, say we understand that there are 25 wholesome and unwholesome karma of Rupa Vajra and Arupa Vajra producing karma born matter at every moment from the beginning moment of rebirth linking. And there are 75 types of consciousness. 75 means except the 10 seeing consciousness and so on, and the 4 Arupa Vajra Vibhagas. So these 75 types of consciousness produce consciousness born matter at the every moment of arising of every citta. So all through life, at one moment karma born rupas are produced, and at another moment karma born and then citta born rupas are produced, and so on. So you can find out how many material properties will be at the first moment of relinking, and at the second moment of relinking, at the third moment of relinking, and then at the first moment of first bhavanga, and so on. I have questions from yesterday. The first one is, Bandi, I remember one Jataka story in which the Buddha on his way for alms passed a cow with a wound on his shoulder and smiles to himself. Anana saw that and asked the Buddha why he smiles. The Buddha pointed to a maggot in the wound and told Anana that it was a Brahmana in its last life. If the story is true, how do you explain what was just taught, where one cannot be reborn in a lower realm? Although in this, I don't know where you get this story from, but the story I remember is a sheep pig. When the Buddha saw the sheep pig, Buddha smiled, and Anana asked why he smiled, and he said this sheep pig was a Brahma in her former life. Now, a Brahma cannot be reborn as an animal directly. So we must understand that a Brahma is first reborn as a Deva or a human being, and then from there he can be reborn in the four woeful states. So sometimes we have to understand this with reference to Abhidhamma. So that is why Abhidhamma is important for correct understanding of the teachings of the Buddha. Now, with reference to yesterday's question on abortion, I would like to follow up with another question. Can transference of merit be performed to an unborn baby died of sickness in the mother's womb? If not, why? I think we can share, because after it's dead, it would be reborn in another world, and if he may be able to know the sharing of merit, and also he may be able to take the share of merit. Please enlighten us on the significance of taking 8 precepts on Vesak Day for late devotees. How and what should be done? Now, taking 8 precepts is better than taking 5 precepts. You get more merit, and you get less akusala when you take and keep 8 precepts. So you don't eat afternoon, and that helps you to get rid of attachment to food, and you don't use flowers, perfumes, and so on, so you reduce attachment to your body. And what should be done? Just keep these precepts, and to polish the precepts, you practice meditation. From personal experiences, it is easy and comfortable to meditate on this auspicious day, as well as all full moon and half moon day. Please comment. Any day, any time is time for meditation, not just the full moons or new moons or half moons. So you can practice on any day and get the results. But sometimes people are conditioned that this is as an auspicious day, and on this day we must do something religious. And in that case, you may do practice on the full moon days and so on. So, but we must not forget that any time is meditation time. Now, I think I told you about this, right? When I was in Sri Lanka, it was about maybe 40 years ago, on the roads there are signs. You know, Sri Lanka is a country that produces tea. So they want you to drink tea so that they can sell you tea. So that the signboard say that any time is tea time. If a person suffers from a terminal disease for some time and later dies after losing consciousness, according to conventional terms, he is said to die a peaceful death. Is it right to say that he has died peacefully and will be reborn in a happy realm according to Buddhist terms? Now, since we are no Buddhas, we cannot say for certain that a person will die peacefully and he will be reborn in a happy realm, because the mind is very difficult to know, especially the mind of others. So just before death, that person may have some thoughts of ill will or anger. So although he may die peacefully, if he died with that anger or some thoughts of ill will, then he cannot be reborn in a happy realm. So we cannot say that person will be reborn suddenly in a happy realm. But if that person is one who had practiced charity and others during his life, in the habit of doing good things to other people, then he may get a good state of mind just before dying. Is it possible to know which realm he is reborn in? No. Through dreams, medicine, etc. We do not know. You know, during the time of the Buddha, when somebody dies, then they went to the Buddha and asked the Buddha whether that person is a Sotapanna or not, and so on. Some Buddha said, if you ask me this question every time a person passes away, I would not have time for doing any other thing. So Buddha taught them one standard by which to judge. We always read the suttas that beings can attain the different stages of sainthood by listening to the discourses. Are there instances where the people attain such stages by reading instead of listening? It is possible to attain stages by reading, but you know, reading is like thinking. It may be possible during the time of the Buddha was talking, or you are reading what the Buddha taught. But nowadays, now when you practice meditation, you are discouraged to read, because reading, even reading books on Dhamma, is a distraction from your main object of meditation or main practice. But through reading, you may get something like a penetration into some stages. But it is doubtful whether one can reach Sotapannahood or other stages just by reading. So you have to practice, and the enlightenment consciousness must be preceded by the vipassana movements. It is said a Sotapanna will be reborn only 7 times. Is it 7 times as a human or 7 rebirths? It is said that 7 times as a human being or a deva. So he may be going back and forth between human and deva, or only in devas or only in human. Now the second question is a tough one. If a Sakadagami is reborn above Bhumi 11, that is above the Deva realm, or if the Sakadagami is reborn in the Brahma world, it will not be possible for him to be a once returner. Because the general statement is that the enlightened persons who are reborn in the Brahma world will not be reborn in the lower existences. So the question is, it will not be possible for him to be a once returner, to be reborn as human once more time. How is that possible? So this is a tough question. During my younger days, I attended the teaching of one very famous Seyado. He was very popular, and a lot of monks, they went to him to study. So whenever he encounter a place which is difficult to explain, he said, "This place is making this old man exhausted." So normally, a Sakadagami who is reborn in the Brahma world will not be reborn in the lower world, so he cannot come back to the human life. But in one book it is stated that there may be Anagamis who are reborn in the Brahma world, and so for them the name once returner is just a name, not to be taken too literally. Because there are six kinds of Sakadagami, six kinds of once returners, and only one of them is the real once returner. The others are not real once returners, but they are also called once returners. So this also, for a Sakadagami who gets jhana here and who is reborn in the Brahma world, will not come back here. But he can still be called Sakadagami because he is like the other Sakadagamis who have attenuated his mental defilements. Anagami who is reborn in Bhumi 23 will pass away and reborn in Bhumi 24 to 27. Does it mean an Anagami could be reborn four times in pure abodes, or five times in total if include the rebirth in Bhumi 23? Yes. He can be reborn in the first of the pure abodes, and then if he does not make any advance, then he may be reborn in the next one, until he reaches the highest one and attains arahantship there. So in that case, he may have to go from one pure abode to another. He will have to spend long time in the samsara. Is it then number of rebirths for Sikhas is actually uncertain? For Sotapannas, now seven times is a general statement. Even there are three kinds of Sotapannas, those who have only one more rebirth, or two to six rebirths and seven rebirths and so on. So we may say that rebirth for Sikhas is actually, yes, uncertain. For a Sotapanna, it can be seven times, or it can be just one time, or three, four, five, six times, and so on. As we know, we will die one day. If we chant Abhidhamma every day, will it help? Is it all right to chant at home? It's okay to chant at home, but just chanting Abhidhamma will not help you to escape death or to avoid death, because death is unavoidable and it will come one day. But if you chant Abhidhamma every day and you have some kind of concentration chanting Abhidhamma, then it will help you to, say, to die peacefully. Person A offered rations, example, canned food and rice to the Sangha. Due to the excessive amount of canned food and rice in the temple, these rations are donated to the needy or elderly homes by the temple. Person B donated the same rations to the needy or elderly homes directly without going through the Sangha. Is there any difference in the merits between A and B? Now, it is said that Sangha is the best field to sow the seed of Punya, right? The last attribute of the Sangha is just that. So, there are many places where Buddha said, giving to the Sangha brings abundant results. That is why Buddha always exhorted others to offer to the Sangha. Now, when Gautami, his stepmother, wanted to offer him a set of robes, he said, offer to the Sangha. So offering to the Sangha can bring more results than offering to the needy or elderly homes. So I think offering through the Sangha, is better than just directly donating to the needy or the elderly homes. If a person is reborn as a human, will his rebirth be in the same race and religion as in his previous life? If it is true, we will always be Buddhists or always be Christians all through the samsara. It is not sure where we will be reborn. Sometimes even a Buddhist may die and born of Christian parents and vice versa. So this is the uncertainty of rebirth for those who have not attained enlightenment, for the Puttujanas. So a Puttujana can be reborn anywhere, but if that Puttujana has a good accumulation of paramis, even if he is reborn in a different religion, I think he will come back to the original religion. Buddha tradition, the aim is to be an arahant. Now, I have a few questions in regard to the following. Buddha and arahants. A Buddha can be described as someone who has awakened the thought of enlightenment to relieve suffering of all sentient beings. Arahant is one who has the 10 fetters and no longer, who has destroyed the 10 fetters and no longer subject to rebirth. In Theravada tradition, the aim is to be an arahant. There is also mention of Buddhas and suttas. How is Buddhahood attained in Theravada tradition since an arahant is no longer subject to rebirth? Is there any difference in the stages in Appana between the arahant and Buddha? Now, it is not true that in Theravada the aim is to be an arahant. Theravada has opened to its adherents different ways of enlightenment. A person can aspire for Buddhahood or he can aspire for arahantship. And even arahantship, he can aspire for the chief discipleship or great discipleship or just an ordinary discipleship. So it is open to the adherent of Theravada Buddhism to choose from these five ways of body or enlightenment. So it is not true that Theravada aim is to be an arahant. Although for many people it is true, but Theravadas can also aspire for Buddhahood and become Buddhas. How is Buddhahood attained in Theravada tradition? It may be a long talk. Now, you aspire for Buddhahood, right? And then you have to get the prophecy in the presence of a living Buddha. And then after that time, you try to accumulate or fulfill the perfections for a long, long time. And when your perfections are fulfilled, when your perfections have become matured, then you will reach Buddhahood. So it can be a long, long time before you become a Buddha if you aspire for Buddhahood. But you can become a Buddha. Now, mostly people understand that in Theravada tradition, the aim is to be an arahant. And then they have Buddhas also. So how do the Theravada Buddhists become Buddhas or something like that? The Theravada Buddhists also can aspire for Buddhahood, and they can become Buddha also. So they don't have to borrow a Buddha from the other the other tradition. Now, is there any difference in the stages in Appana between the Arahant and Buddha? I think it is yes and no. In the eradication of mental defilements, there is a little difference. Now, Arahants eradicate mental defilements and Buddhas also eradicate mental defilements. But it is said that Buddhas can eradicate mental defilements without any residue, without any, let us say, smell or something like that. So the Buddhas can eradicate mental defilements along with the habits contingent upon the mental defilements. But it is said that Arahants, although they eradicate mental defilements, are unable to shake off that habit. So that is the difference between the eradication of mental defilement between the Arahants and the Buddhas. In the attainment of jhanas also, because the question is apana, so in the attainment of jhanas also, there can be difference as well as there can be no difference. Because when Arahants attain the 8 or 9 jhanas, they are the same as that the Buddha attained. But what the Buddha attained are not just the attainments, but these attainments are accompanied by what are called the knowledges that are peculiar to Buddha. Then path thought process, idle thought process. Can the object for kamma nimitta, gati nimitta be only one or more, such as KNKN? I don't understand this question. Now, in one life, the object of Patisandhi, Bhavanga and Sudhi, they are the same. So if the object of Patisandhi is Kama, then for that life, the Kama will be the object of Bhavanga and Sudhi. So there is no variation. But for the next life, it may be Kama or Kama Nimitta or Gati Nimitta. But even if it is Kama, that Kama may be different from the Kama of the old or previous life. And karma can be described as deeds and results with intention behind the action. Results with intention, I don't know what this means. Karma can be described as deeds and results with intention behind the action. Results are the fruit produced by karma, not the intention. Intention is actually karma. So with intention you do something, and so that is a kind of volition. In killing, for example, requires one to know that the being to kill is living, the intention of killing and the methods of killing. In Noble Eightfold Path, there is mention of right livelihood. A butcher kills for a living, but yet the volition during the act might not be greed or hatred. It is impossible, according to the teachings of the Buddha, to kill somebody without hate or dosa or ill will. Although the killing may be a mercy killing, at the moment of killing, it is definitely accompanied by ill will or dosa. So, a butcher kills for a living, but yet the volition during the act might not be greed or hatred. The whole course of action is get it out without the intention to kill. No. Because there is killing, he kills, and so he has the intention to kill. Can Venerable kindly comment on this? So there is always the intention to kill when somebody kills a living being. Because he has intention, he kills. So if he has no intention, he will not kill. So a butcher kills for a living, but killing itself is an akusala act. It can never be neutral act. All beings are the master of their own karma. How and why those human beings reborn as twin triplets or take the same site of destiny in the same mother womb? Kindly enlighten us on this. All beings are the master of their own karma. It is not said that way. All beings have karma as their own property. Karma is their matrix of mother. Karma is their relative, and so on. Beings are born different ways, like twins or triplets or whatever, depending on the karma they did in the past. To be reborn as a human being is the result of kusala karma. But there are other akusala karmas of obstructive nature, and so they may interfere with the rebirth as human beings, and so they are maybe twins or triplets, or sometimes they are born with defects. So that is all because of karma in the past. So twins or triplets may take the same sign of destiny in their mother's womb because they are to be there together. If they have the sign of destination during that sign may be the same. But if their object is not sign of destination but karma or karma nibbana, then they can be different.